The committee will come to order. We do have a quorum present, and so I would like to start by having the minutes approved. Is there a motion to approve the minutes from February 4th, February 11th, and February 18th? Representative Daniels moves to approve the minutes of February 4th, February 11th, and February 18th. Are there any additions, corrections, or changes? Representative Liebling.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. It's not an addition or correction or change, but I just want to say that it's great to see that finally, after three tries, we finally have on the minutes the indication that when we took a vote on the encumbrance of wages for nursing home workers, that those who decided to take a walk are now indicated on the minutes. So I'm glad to see that finally these are correct, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Liebling. I should have had you make the motion for approval today. Seeing no other discussion, all in favor of the minutes and approval, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. The minutes are adopted. We have several bills up today, members, most of them dealing with the same issue. I would remind members that the first bills that we are taking up today, most of them do have tax implications, and so I would just remind the members that the discussion for the comments today should be within our committee's jurisdiction and not so much the tax area. We're going to begin today, since all of these bills are very similar in nature, with House Research, and they'll walk the committee through the five Social Security tax bills that we have today. And after the walkthrough, we'll hear public testimony on the bills, and then we do plan to move each bill individually to the tax committee. So without further ado, I would ask House Research to please give a presentation on what these bills are doing.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Nina Manzi from the House Research Department. I think you all have a little table in your packets that lists the various Social Security exclusion bills that are before the committee today. There are five of them, but two of them are the same as two others, so there really are only three concepts. I'll start with the lowest number there. It's House File 300 would phase in a full exclusion of Social Security benefits by allowing exclusion of 10% in the first year and then an additional 10% in the next year and so on over 10 years until 100% is excluded. The exclusion would first be allowed in tax year 2015 and then it would be fully phased in tax year 2024. That bill, House File 300, is the same as House File 308. The second one, House File 304, is the same sort of idea, but it phases in the exclusion more quickly. It phases it in over a five-year time period, and it starts at 20% exclusion in the first year and then increases by 20 percentage points in each successive year, so it would be reaching 100% after 5 years. That one doesn't start the exclusion until tax year 2016, so not this year that we're currently in, but next year, and then it would be fully phased in tax year 2020. The third bill has its own schedule for phasing in the Social Security exclusion, and it does it over 8 years, and that bill is House File 309. And it would start the phase-in tax year 2015, and the exclusion would be at 100% in tax year 2022. And the summary for that bill lists what the percentage would be for each of the 8 years over which it's phased in.
All right. Are there any questions from members? Okay. We'll move into public testimony then on these bills. First, we have Will Phillips from AARP. Welcome to the committee, and please state your name for the record.
Thank you. Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Will Phillips. I'm the state director for AARP Minnesota, and we greatly appreciate the opportunity to be here with you today to offer comments on these various bills. AARP does support the various bills that have been introduced, which would lower the tax burden for many older Minnesotans by phasing out the tax on Social Security. Minnesota, as you may well know, is only one of seven states that tax Social Security to the full extent under federal law, And this means that 38 states are not taxing this benefit and that the others have reduced the tax on Social Security beneficiaries over time. For AARP, retirement security is a major priority because we know many Minnesotans do not have adequate savings to retire. So any steps we can take to lower the tax burden on older Minnesotans is a very positive step. We know that for many, a secure retirement is out of reach. Today, one out of every seven Minnesota seniors lives in poverty. 28% of Minnesota seniors rely on Social Security for their only source of income. And while many of these seniors have incomes low enough to make them exempt from state tax on Social Security, increasing numbers do not, because Minnesota's exemption thresholds for Social Security taxation have never been adjusted for inflation. We know that Minnesota's 50% exemption tier was established in 1984, and our 15% tier was established in 1994. And again, these exemption levels have never been adjusted for inflation, meaning that in today's dollars, many low and middle income beneficiaries are failing to qualify for these exemptions. Now, we do realize that a complete phase out of this tax does come with a significant impact on the budget, and that all of you and your legislative colleagues must balance the interest of fairness and taxation with spending, including that for many of the programs that we actually support. But when you are retired, it's tough to increase your income. And cost of living adjustments, when they happen at all in Social Security, are small and don't keep up with the increase in other consumer and medical services like prescription drugs and utility services. So we believe that if we cannot eliminate the tax altogether, then we should at least adjust the tiers to protect lower and middle income Minnesotans who have found themselves paying increasing amounts of tax on Social Security. As our state ages, it is in our best interest for all of us to help our citizens remain independent and in their communities. And one way we can help them is to reduce their tax burden and give them all a raise. So that concludes my remarks. Thank you.
All right. Any questions for the testimony? Representative Liebling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and good morning.
Good morning.
Thanks for your testimony. So I heard you say a few things that I want to follow up with. First of all, I heard you say that, and correct me if I'm misparaphrasing you, but that the AARP believes that any steps that will lower taxes for seniors is a good step. And I wonder about that statement. I mean, perhaps you're using a little hyperbole here, but I mean, does that mean that no matter how wealthy the seniors are or how much the burden is shifted to younger people who are poorer, that any step is really a good step if it reduces taxes for older people? I mean, I just really want to get that clear because I look to AARP, and I know a lot of us do, as a really good progressive organization, and that really looks broadly, at least I always thought so, and I just want to get really clear on that. And then I also have another question.
Sure. Mr. Chair, Phillips. Representative Liebling, I'm looking at my testimony for those exact words. I think that for the purposes of our presence here today, we're very particularly talking about this legislation, and that as we look at the tiers that have not been adjusted, as we look at how this would impact hundreds of thousands of Minnesota seniors, we're very interested in, again, supporting this legislation. I'm going to have to scrub this testimony a little bit, but I would not say that that's a blanket statement for all AARP policy, but certainly as applied to this legislation today.
Representative Liebling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And the other thing I wanted to follow up on, you said that, I think you said one in seven seniors is in poverty, and that some percentage, I missed it, rely on Social Security exclusively. And I just wanted to have you be really clear. None of these bills would benefit those people. Is that right?
Mr. Phillips.
Mr. Chair, Representative Liebling, without looking at the numbers, I would surmise that that's probably correct. But we do know that as we look at the tiers, and as more and more have fallen into some of the tiers because they haven't been adjusted, that we do see lower middle-income beneficiaries who are being taxed at rates higher than if we would have, at a minimum, adjusted those tiers over time. I think we raised those particular numbers to I guess, characterize that we do have significant problems with current seniors who find themselves in difficult situations. And certainly, as we look to the future, a big retirement savings deficit with current workers who are certainly going to be facing issues.
Representative Liebling?
And Mr. Chair, and thank you. And just to clarify, too, this, the tiers that you're talking about adjusting, am I correct in saying that those are set at the federal level, and Minnesota conforms to them, but that if we were to adjust those tiers here in Minnesota, we'd be out of conformity with the feds and really probably complicate the tax returns for those folks? And also, I'm assuming that, and of course this isn't the tax committee, but that adjusting the tiers in Minnesota would give some help to those for whom that lack of inflationary adjustment has hit them, but the bigger whack is on the federal level. Is that correct?
Mr. Phillips.
My understanding is that we're one of seven states that tax to the fullest extent. So all of those other states, if you call it lack of conformity or having made adjustments in their own states, they have already done that. So we are certainly supporting a move to make some adjustments and to reduce that tax burden.
Okay, well,
Mr.
Chair, thank you. I mean, I don't think that answered the question, but maybe some other people will be able to. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Gunther.
Thank you. Is this just another reason why Minnesota seniors are leaving this state? And in my community, there's hundreds of them leaving, if not just for 6 months and 2 weeks, for the whole time, and leaving their grandchildren and their families here. And because of this, taxing their Social Security is just another reason for them to leave. Is that true?
Mr. Phillips.
Mr. Chair, Representative Gunther, it's an argument that we've heard. It's an argument and a statement that we've heard from some of our members. We don't have evidence that would suggest that is widespread or that's the number one reason why people perhaps leave the state. But we certainly have, for example, a member who testified in front of a Senate committee from La Crescent, who had just moved to the state of Minnesota from Iowa, who, while he's not planning to leave anytime soon, he likes it in Minnesota, certainly did recognize and notice an increase in his tax bill. So I think it's noticeable. Is it a reason why people leave? I'll leave that to others to form those opinions, but certainly it's something that we've heard.
Representative Gunther?
I just look at people that we call snowbirds. There's a lot of them leave, but the biggest exodus of people in Minnesota, in greater Minnesota in particular, are people over 65. But there's also another positive trend for us people in greater Minnesota, and that is people 39 are moving back home.
All right. Thank you, Representative Gunther. Any other questions for the testifier? Seeing none, Mr. Phillips, we thank you for your testimony. Next, we have Barb Leonard.
Thank you.
All right, Ms. Leonard, please state your name for the record and give us your testimony.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. My name is Barbara Leonard. I'm a resident of Eagan, Minnesota. Thank you for allowing me to be here. I am speaking in support of the legislation to remove Social Security benefits from taxable income in Minnesota. My husband and I are lifelong Minnesotans. We were born here. We raised our children here. My husband and I started our own business here. We've lived in the same house for 30 years, and we do not want to leave it. However, we are approaching retirement, and our financial advisor has suggested moving out of state for tax purposes. One of our kids lives in Texas, a state with a friendlier climate weather-wise, as well as a friendlier tax climate. Another one of our children and one of our grandchildren lives in North Dakota. Again, a friendlier tax climate. We could see ourselves spending our winters in Texas and our summers in North Dakota. However, our third child lives just a mile from us in Eagan, Minnesota, with her husband and their daughter, Macy, who is a special needs child. Living so close to them helps us to help care for Macy. Moving away from them would be heart-wrenching. If we stay in Minnesota and Social Security benefits continue to be taxed over the course of our retired years, we would pay upwards of $50,000 in taxes here in Minnesota. We must consider towards what other purpose we might put that $50,000? The answer for us is easy. Macy, our special needs grandchild, has a trust fund for her future needs. She is severely disabled and will need very expensive specialized care her entire life, beyond my lifetime and beyond her parents' lifetime. We are not wealthy people. The opportunity to provide that kind of money towards Macy's care will be a huge part of our decision to stay in Minnesota. I ask that you please discontinue taxing Social Security benefits. If I may speak on behalf of the thousands of Minnesotans who retire every day, please give us an excuse to stay in our home state in the autumn of our lives. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Leonard. Are there any questions for the testifier? Seeing none, Ms. Leonard, the committee thanks you for your testimony. Next, we have Scott Halstead. If you could please state your name for the record and give us your testimony.
Mr. Chair, greetings from sunny Shoreview. My name is Scott Halstead. I'm the Legislative Vice President for National Active and Retired Federal Employees, short-term NARF. There's approximately 28,700 federal retirees in the state of Minnesota. They live in every county in Minnesota, every jurisdiction. Many of them are NARF members, and we urge your support for these various opportunities and priorities. HF 7046 and 304 would be our first priorities. Federal retirees, most of them at this point in time, are under the civil service retirement system. They contribute 7% towards their retirement into a defined benefit plan. They make $26,000 a year average annuity per annuitant and survivor. They did not participate in Social Security. They do receive Medicare. They do have health benefits through their retirement programs, which they contribute to. But they are taxed 100% on their pensions. How does Minnesota compare with other states? As stated before, 38 states don't tax Social Security, and 6 offer partial exemptions. 20 states don't tax pensions, federal pensions, and 22 exempt a portion of their pensions. Minnesota's overall tax burden is among the highest in the nation. Where are Minnesota's, are Minnesota's aging in place? Well, I looked at the public retirement systems, the PARA. PARA reports 10% of their retirees receive their annuities outside the state of Minnesota. TRA, the teachers, 14.5% of the people under the TRA system receive their annuities outside the state of Minnesota. There aren't really good statistics kept on a lot of these issues, but people are leaving. I know, and Susan Bauer has testified here before, and I know she reported in the Civic Caucus interview here in late November that there's a consistent pattern of people in their upper 50s leaving the state of Minnesota. Everything I read, the boomers don't have adequate savings and resources for the retirement program. Where are these people going to go? Are they going to stay in a state with high cost of living, high taxes, or are they going to leave? Go somewhere else. I think the evidence is pretty clear when you go to the retirement communities in Florida, Texas, Arizona, these other states. They are leaving. And they leave for a variety of reasons, and it's not just taxes. It's other reasons also. Everything's not peachy in some of those other states. Some of these people find out when they leave, and they get down there, and they stay there for a number of years, and they found out the health care is not so good. the services are not so good. It really isn't as low cost because they have high sales taxes and other taxes, property taxes, et cetera, that reach out to them. But they generally still have a lower overall tax situation than the state of Minnesota. Minnesota is one of the best places to live in the United States. We have one of the highest qualities of living that there is in this country. That is not publicized at all in most of the retirement magazines. We need to retain our Minnesota people. If they're leaving and taking their income and with them, and the way that the tax system currently works, it reaches out to them in such a way that they come back and conduct their business, do things here in Minnesota, they'll get taxed. And we need to keep these people in Minnesota. The wealthy, we've talked about the taxation of the wealthy. When the wealthy leave, who is going to invest in the new startup businesses? They are the people that can finance it, they mentor, they can start the new businesses. So it is important to keep people. Those people can be the ones that can contribute to the foundations that help out everyone. So it is important that we have all people, all eligible for these tax breaks. We need to look at outstate Minnesota. Where should people retire? If we have people with minimal incomes, maybe we need to look at trying to get people to move from the Twin City metro area into the residences out in the outstate, cut their costs of living, help contribute to the economies in outstate Minnesota, create jobs outstate. So I think there are things that we can do to make a positive impact upon them. In summary, Minnesota needs older adults with their incomes for economic development, especially in rural areas. The financial benefit of volunteering, which is something that's often overlooked, is very valuable to the state of Minnesota. We recommend a reasonable income tax exemption and, I know it's not part of this committee, elimination of the estate tax to bring back Minnesotans and keep them here. If we need to find other ways to raise some other taxes to make sure we have some other income, well, maybe we need to broaden the sales tax, lower rates, new things there. On behalf of NARF members in Minnesota, I thank you for your consideration of this important legislation. We would urge that you put federal employees in under this classification to be included so they're not discluded at this point in time. And we will support this bill. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony, Mr. Halstead. Representative Newton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Mr. Halstead, on the figures that you cited for checks being sent out out of the state of Minnesota, do you have a breakdown as to which states they're going to? You know, is it the northern climate?
The first one is Wisconsin, but after that it becomes Florida, Texas, Arizona are the primary states, Georgia, Tennessee, Colorado, California. But most of them are lower tax states. California certainly isn't a lower tax state.
Representative Newton.
Well, Mr. Chair and Mr. Halstead, I would suggest that maybe climate has as much to do with it, if not more.
Well,
I don't know about Representative Counter, but I would suggest that climate probably is the main reason we can play golf all year round. You finally have some time.
Mr. Halstead.
Mr. Chair, I understand what you're saying, and certainly for some people that's true. You know, the climate's not great in Florida, and in some of those places you ever go down there in the summer. I did last summer, and it was 98, 99, 100 degrees, and humid as all heck. And, nobody's playing golf in Florida unless they get up about 4 o'clock in the morning.
Representative Newton, any follow-up? All right. Representative Keel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to make a comment when we talk about going to south to warmer climates because of the winters. I found it very interesting that I found not a few, but, well, under 20. But when I door knocked, quite often I would say, you know, I was campaigning, and they would say, oh, nice to see you, but I don't vote here. Really? Well, you have a house here. Yeah, this is my vacation home. Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. And can you explain why? Because the taxes are difficult here in Minnesota, so I have reversed my home wherever it's Texas, Arizona, Florida. My residency is in those states. But I just, as you alluded to, Florida is awfully hot from June to September. And so they come north to cool off for a little while and then head back down. But they cited their reasons for, as well as weather, but the taxes is why they changed, because they originated from my district. So I found that very interesting that that was happening often. And I actually have a couple of couples that, it's kind of funny. The wife says, no, we're not moving officially to Arizona. The husband says, I like the tax structure better there. So I don't know who will win out. We'll see. But that's a serious consideration, and I just want to share that.
All right. Are there any other questions for the testifier? Representative Yaruso.
Just a quick welcome to the committee. Mr. Halstead's a constituent of mine. And as you mentioned, the quality of life that we have a really large number of seniors in our area, and I'm sure it's particularly because we've got people that really want to stay in the area. So thank you for coming down.
Representative Liebling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you very much for your testimony. I just wanted to sort of confirm what I thought I heard from you, which was that your own pension would not be excluded under this bill, right? Yep. This is just the people that get Social Security. And then everybody who's getting some kind of retirement outside of that would still be paying taxes on their income. Am I right on that?
Mr. Halstead.
Mr. Chair, that's correct at this point in time. Some federal employees, and of course their families under income tax return, would receive some benefits under this bill. Some people would not. A lot of people would not, especially many of the single people that maybe worked strictly for the federal government.
Representative Liebling?
So thanks, Mr. Chair. So do you not think that's a little bit unfair, that some people's money would be treated differently than other people's money depending on the source of it, where you happen to work?
Correct.
During your working life?
Mr. Chair, correct.
Mr. Halstead.
I think that's unfair, and that's why we would like to see federal employee or retirees included under a bill like this.
Any follow-up, Representative Wheatley?
Thank you.
All right. Any other questions for the testifier, Mr. Halstead? All right, Mr. Halstead, the committee thanks you for your testimony. Next up, we have Ted Lilly. You could please come forward and introduce yourself for the record and give us your testimony.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I'm Ted Lilly, president of the Taxpayers League. I'm honored to be here this morning to share our thoughts about these bills also. The Taxpayers League is supportive of these bills. We believe that they are important to the competitiveness of Minnesota and encourage you to support them as they go forward. As we've heard in other testimony this morning, these bills would impact about 650,000 Minnesotan seniors who are paying the Social Security taxes. Research shows that about 70% of Minnesota seniors could be impacted by these taxes. And the impact could be up to $600 per person in Minnesota. So these are significant dollars that have impacts on families of Minnesotans. Minnesota is one of seven states that does currently tax Social Security. And in 2008, there were 14 states that tax Social Security. So the move is away from taxing Social Security and recognizing seniors and the fact that they have paid taxes throughout their lifetimes. One of the interesting articles that has come out is Kiplinger Magazine has identified the most friendly states to retire in and the least friendly states. And Minnesota is currently ranked as the fourth least friendly state to retire in. And one of the largest impacts on that is the tax on Social Security benefits. And we again, as the Taxpayers League, encourage us to consider reducing those taxes over a period of years, as these bills would do. There are three key points that I would like to make about the current status. One is that the state demographer recently came out with a report that talked about what groups of people are moving into Minnesota, what demographic groups, and what groups are leaving the state of Minnesota. And there were two key groups that seem to be leaving the state of Minnesota. One is college-age students who are going to college in other areas of the country, and when they leave the state of Minnesota, many of them are not returning. They're not coming back to Minnesota. They're starting their careers in other places. The other key group is that seniors seem to be leaving the state of Minnesota in larger numbers than are staying in the state. Not that are staying in the state, but that are coming to the state, I should say. So again, there does seem to be an impact on seniors because they are demographically making decisions to leave the state of Minnesota. The second item is that this tax on Social Security is similar to the estate tax. Now, in conversations about the estate tax, we hear conversations that is allowing or creating a situation where wealthy seniors are leaving the state of Minnesota to not have to pay that estate tax. In this case, I think we're talking more about middle-class people. And middle-class people who have great impact on Social Security, that may be, as we've heard in testimony, a significant or, in fact, in many cases, the most significant portion of their income in retirement. We are having impact on their ability to stay in Minnesota. And many of the middle-class folks do still have a retirement home. They have some place that they have gone. And, again, we're offering an incentive to those people to spend more time in that other state and leave the state of Minnesota. So it's impacting, the third point, is our competitiveness. Our neighboring states are moving away from taxing Social Security. Wisconsin and Iowa are two of the states that have moved away from this. And if we lose our competitiveness, we give seniors a reason to leave the state of Minnesota. And that would really be our concern, is the competitiveness that we have with other states. So, Mr. Chairman, the Taxpayers League of Minnesota would support these bills. We think it's a reasoned approach to do this over a period of years, and that would be our position.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Lilly, for your testimony. Representative Yaruso.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Lilly, did that ranking of the favorable states to retire to take into account life expectancy or other health indices?
Mr. Chairman.
Yes, Representative Yaruso, was that for Representative Lilly or Mr. Lilly?
I'm just paying my respects to former Senator. Oh, excuse me, Senator Lilly. I'm sorry. I failed in my attempt.
Mr. Lilly.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Yaruso, thank you. And I do appreciate my brother Leon being here. And it is wonderful. My understanding is that the Kiplinger's report did not take into consideration life expectancies and some of those issues. It did take into consideration the number of taxes and the number and quality of life issues. So that may have been one of the factors, but it was not one of the major factors in that study, as I understand.
Representative Yaruso?
Also, thank you, Mr. Chair. Cited that there may be a benefit as much as $600. What would be the circumstances of someone that would reach a benefit of $600 under these bills?
Mr. Lilly.
Mr. Chairman, that is a number that we have seen in a number of reports. The $600 would be a considered tax savings at the completion of this process, so it would not be the first year. In each of the bills, the Social Security reduction is over a period of years, so that would be at the end of the tax period.
Mm-hmm. Representative Yaruso.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Do you mean cumulative or you mean in the final year?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Yaruso, my understanding is that it would be each year going forward.
Representative Yaruso.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. But what would the, so in those years, what would be the financial circumstances of a person that would get that big a benefit from this?
Mr. Lilly.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Yaruso, my understanding is that that would be an average number for all seniors in the state of Minnesota, the 637,000 of them.
Representative Yaruso?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you. That clarifies it, because I believe you said as much as, so I thought you meant a maximum. Thank you.
I apologize. All right. Representative Liebling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Mr. Lilly, I'm curious about this out-migration example or that you told us about. That's really interesting. I just wondered if you had a little more data about that. That are we losing more college-age students than we are seniors? I mean, how, get, you know, that's the first time I've really heard that figure, that we're losing the college-age students. Could you just explain a bit more?
Mr. Lilly.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Liebling, I do not have that report in front of me, but I could certainly get that for the members of the committee. It seemed to me that in reading the report that the majority of those leaving the state were in the college age, but it was a significant number of seniors that were also leaving the state. One of the interesting things in that demographer's report, Mr. Chairman, was that the most senior level, this most senior age, actually were returning to the state of Minnesota. So those who were ending the or nearing the end of life were returning to their families, apparently, who were staying in the state of Minnesota. Mr. Chairman.
And Representative Liebling and members, we can get that report from the demographer as well and hand it out to the committee. Representative Liebling.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And Mr. Lilly, I just found that really interesting because, you know, in Minnesota, as we know, and I should have mentioned this when the gentleman from AARP was here, you know, AARP ranked Minnesota number one for long-term care, number one. So when we talk about competitiveness, I mean, and talk about keeping seniors here, I mean, and some of our testifiers acknowledged, we have a very good quality of life here. And I think all of us know that doesn't come free. Somebody has to pay for it. And so it's really interesting to me that we're losing college-age students because those are the very people who would have to pay additional if we take this if we don't make our seniors pay taxes on their money, if something about being old means you shouldn't pay regardless of your income, then somebody else has to pay so that we can continue to provide that level of services for those seniors. And in this very committee, we've got hundreds of millions of dollars that we're proposing to spend to beef up our services for our seniors. So I just find it very interesting that college-age students are leaving because, you know, I think we need to have a great quality of life here in Minnesota for everybody. But certainly, if you said to me, who should we be more concerned about keeping, our seniors or our college-age students, I think you'd have to say the college-age students are probably going to end up contributing more to our economy over the years than the seniors. Now, I'm not saying that we're pitting them against each other. These are very multifactorial issues, and there's a lot that goes on with people's decisions to stay or to leave. But I don't think, from what I understand, and maybe others will speak to this later, I don't think there's any real economic data that shows that we're driving seniors away with our taxation. But I'm also interested in something else. You talked about the estate tax, and we often hear that same thing. Oh, seniors are leaving the state because of the estate tax. And I don't doubt that some are. However, those who are probably the same ones who are would be paying the most on their Social Security. In other words, the most wealthy seniors. And I kind of wonder about the interaction of these two things. And I would suspect that the estate tax would be much more important to that decision because, after all, this caps out, the tax caps out at 85%. We exempt 15% of Social Security income. The feds exempt 15%. So you can only be paying on 85%. And you know, if you're paying the highest rate on that money, it means you're in the highest tax bracket anyway. So a lot of this would be going to those most wealthy seniors. But I did have actually a question for you, and that is, you mentioned about adjusting the tiers, and the tiers haven't been adjusted. And I think that that's, you know, we are all aware of that. These tiers have been, because of inflation, lower and lower income people are being hit with this tax. I think that's certainly clear. None of these bills do anything about that, except to get rid of the tax altogether eventually. And I'm wondering if the Taxpayers League is interested in seeing adjustment to those tiers. you know, why are you not proposing anything on that? Or would you propose that? And then there, of course, is the conformity issue that was mentioned, that I mentioned before. You know, but this is essentially being set at the federal level, where these things are. And are you lobbying at the federal level to change this? Or do you know that anybody is?
Briefly, Mr. Lilly, and if you can keep your comments to, or your answers to, the Aging Policy Committee.
Very good. Mr. Chairman, Representative Liebling, there were a number of questions or a number of statements in that conversation. Number one, I think the Taxpayers League is interested in all Minnesotans across the spectrum of life. I don't think we want to be in a position of pitting one group against another group in Minnesota. And I don't think any of us in this room want to be doing that. Again, it's a question of competitiveness that we are most concerned about. And if we have seniors or people at any time in their lives that are leaving the state of Minnesota making those decisions, I think all of us on this committee and in the legislature would be interested in trying to get to the bottom of why they might be leaving the state of Minnesota. So I think that those conversations are fruitful and important for us to have. And one of the aspects that may be impacting people is the tax on Social Security. That is one of the aspects that may be impacting people. And again, as I stated earlier, the estate tax, yes, impacts perhaps the most wealthy, but here we're talking about the middle class. Here we're talking about the average citizens, and we've heard this in testimony today, that this is having impacts on average Minnesotans, on the middle class. So I do think that this is important, and it is something that we need to continue to be talking about, and that is the reason for us to be supporting of it. To the last question on the tiers and the conformity and the federal level, the Taxpayers League of Minnesota works in Minnesota. We do not work on a federal level. But there are other groups that are working at that level, and we certainly could carry your message forward that is an important issue that we would need to be working on a national level also.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Representative Liebling. Representative Lilly.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Mr. Lilly. I had the opportunity to visit with some folks on the telephone last evening, and I'd been thinking about them because a friend of my wife's just won an Oscar, and in his speech he said, you should call your folks right now, not email them, not text them, but call them. So I was really busy, like on Sunday, you know, and then after I heard it late, and then so then it's Monday, and then so yesterday I'm driving and I'm thinking I better call my folks. So anyways, my folks happened to win her in, where is it? I think it's New Mexico.
Yeah.
And I was talking to them, and I don't know about your folks, but my folks choose to live in Minnesota and pay taxes here, and I was just curious what your, you know, when I talked to them last night on the phone, I'm just curious what they would say to this, your position on this bill.
Mr. Lilly.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Lilly, thank you for that question. It somewhat opens a door to the conversations that I think families are having across the state of Minnesota. And the answer to the question is that I think that they would probably my parents choose to live in, they have a home here in Minnesota, they have a home in New Mexico. They choose to remain residents of Minnesota because of the quality of life, because of the fact that they've raised their family, because they've had a business here. But they do spend a significant amount of time in New Mexico also. And I can share with you that I happened to spend a couple days with my parents a few days ago, and one of the conversations that came up was that a certain brother-in-law or brother had advised them to leave the state of Minnesota because the taxes are higher in Minnesota than they are in other places. They choose to stay here because of their commitment to the state. But families are having this conversation. And it is important for us to acknowledge and recognize that as families are having that conversation, that we don't want to offer them that incentive to leave the state of Minnesota to be less competitive with other states. So I think that that's exactly right. I think that they choose to be here. I think the other main reason that they choose to be here is they want to make sure that they can place a vote for a certain state representative that is very important to them. So, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Lilly. Representative Lilly, to the notion of nepotism.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Mr. Lilly, I'm a little bit jealous. I didn't, you know, when people come to us and they're tanner than we are, this time of year, we have a little bit of envy, and I think that's bipartisanly that we look at folks, and I can think of a lobbyist that's often very tan, and I don't really always want to talk to him. He's so tan, and as we pale. But, you know, just I think I appreciate your honest answer, and they have made a decision, and yes, other people are making that that table talk or that Barca Lounge or whatever it is discussion. But I keep going back to the life expectancy thing, and they have a good quality of life on both ends of their, you know, they're in a lucky, very lucky position, but they're able to make these decisions, and I think they're making the right decision. But I look at longevity, which Representative Liebling just, or I thought you touched it just briefly, or did Representative Russo did. Minnesota continues to just be the head of the bar on life expectancy, and isn't that's ultimately, it's not somehow big your, you know, we all can't have Representative David's checkbook, but it's a nice one, I'm sure. But life expectancy, you know, Hawaii and Minnesota, I think, are the tops, and that's a bar that I, as I age, I look at longevity, and can we live longer and those sort of things. So, anyways, thank you.
Anything to that, Mr. Lilly?
No further comments, Mr. Chairman.
Members, I would remind you that we do have 7 bills up today, 5 of which deal directly with this. And so we do have 4 more members who have requested to ask Mr. Lilly some questions. But if we could keep those short, we now have 3 members. Thank you, Representative Gunther, that have questions. If we could keep those short so we can move on to the bills very soon, I would appreciate it. Thank you. And Representative Mason.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Mr. Lilly, I'm going to make some comments and then just have you react. First of all, you know, being in the legislature, we're trying to balance a lot here. And in this committee recently, we passed a bill that I think was worth like over $200 million to help people in nursing homes. We are trying very hard to deal with the aging issues. So there's a lot of money that is going forth with that. I know that some of the seniors in my district are coming there to be with their families. They're not native Minnesotans, but their families are here. So they are moving here. Some of my friends that are retired, they're going, like one of my neighbors goes to Arizona for health reasons. It's just a lot easier. So they are, it's not always taxes, but I did hear that last year quite a number of times. So I understand that. The other group that you mentioned, however, I thought was interesting was the college age people. And I happen to sit on transportation. And again, if we want to be competitive in Minnesota, we need to be doing more transportation, mass transit in particular. And we need a lot, just be spending a lot more money in transportation. So if we're taking, and if we pass these bills, you know that's a lot of money being taken out of our revenue stream. So do you have any thoughts about where we can get money to pay for transportation if we do this bill? And it's, and it, you know, I guess I've always thought about Social Security should not be taxed. It's not that I'm averse, but we have some strong competing interests here.
Mr. Lilly.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Mason, great question. I don't know that the Taxpayers League is today prepared to talk about the transportation budget and overall spending and priorities. Today we're talking, I'm here to talk about these bills specifically. I think that that is an issue that the legislature is tackling this year, and I'm very interested in hearing the outcome of those conversations.
Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Newton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And this is not a question for Mr. Lilly, but it's a general question. You mentioned the state demographer, and when it comes to college students, I'd like to have that broken down by resident students and non-resident students leaving the state, just to make sure that we're dealing with apples and apples. The other thing, Mr. Chair, is I would like to have Mr. Michaels or Ms. Mansi give us some information as to effective tax rates, for lack of a better term, how Minnesota compares overall with the total tax burden with other states. Because it seems to me that all states have to have a roughly the same amount of money to keep things going, and that money is generated usually from the taxpayers. So if we could get some information on that so that we, because I have a feeling this is going to keep coming up committee after committee, and so that we know, you know, exactly how much the difference is in the states. And then also, you know, if we're losing seniors to the extent that it's alluded, it would seem to me that that is a savings in health care costs for us, because people in, you know, seniors are leaving, they tend to be the ones that have the most expensive health care. So if we could get some information on that as well as what the savings would be as people leave the state. So thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Newton. I think I got all of that, but I'll check the record and double to make sure. Representative Miller.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Lilly, thanks for coming this morning. And this will be brief, a quick question. I want to give you, from the Taxpayer League's perspective, I'm going to give you the demographics of a person. If you had a person who is a lifelong employee for the phone company, started out splicing in the manholes, eventually moved on to lineman, the middle management, his wife stayed at home the whole time. They never owned a new car until they were probably in their 60s. They only owned one home. Would you consider that a wealthy person?
Mr. Lilly.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Miller, I don't know how to determine who is wealthy.
Single income, middle class sort of income.
Mr. Miller.
Single income, middle class income. Would you consider that a wealthy person in the United States?
Mr. Lilly.
I would say that's a middle class person, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Miller.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. That is my mother and father. I did their taxes the final year after my mom passed away, and they paid the full Social Security taxes. They are not wealthy people. They're people that worked hard their whole lives, put their money into good things like our education and stuff like that. They were not wealthy people. They were being fully taxed. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Representative Miller. Seeing no other questions for Mr. Lilly. Is there anyone? Thank you, Mr. Lilly, for your testimony
for the committee.
Is there anyone else who wishes in the audience to testify on House Files 300, 304, 308, 309, or 746? Okay, seeing no one in the audience who wishes to testify, we're going to move into the bills. I will move House File 300 with Representative Lohmer. And Representative Lohmer, I understand you have an A2 amendment to get the bill in the shape you want it.
I do, Mr. Chair. Thank you.
Okay. I will move the A2 amendment as well. Any discussion on that? Do you want to just briefly explain the amendment?
I could have Ms. Mansi explain that, Mr. Chair, if that's okay with you.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, the A2 amendment makes two largely technical changes to the language in the bill. The language in the bill says that the percentage of Social Security that's excluded in the first year is 10%, and then that is to increase by 10% each year. And this changes that to 10 percentage points each year, so that it would go, as the author intended, from 10% to 20%, 30%, 40%, and so on. The other change is to change a usage of calendar year to taxable year. The bill uses the term taxable year first, and then it switches to calendar year later on. And since it's a tax provision, it really should be referencing taxable year in both places.
Okay, thank you, Ms. Manzi. And my understanding is that all the A2 amendments for these bills do the same thing. Is that?
Mr. Chair, that's correct. Four of the five bills have similar A2 amendments. The remaining bill lays out a percentage for each year of the phase-in, so it didn't have the percentage point issue.
Okay. Thank you. Any discussion to the A2 amendment? Seeing none, all in favor of the A2 amendment signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, same sign. The A2 amendment is adopted. Representative Lohmer, two sentences on your bill, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Thank you so much for hearing this bill this morning, House File 300. I'll try to stick closely to my two sentences, but I might go a little bit over. I really believe this is an important bill. This bill, I have been hearing a lot from my constituents and my friends. In fact, the word on the street is, don't retire in Minnesota, don't die in Minnesota. And we've heard a lot of testimony about this. There just are too many people leaving our state who have worked and played a vital role in building strong communities. And we want to send them a message. We value you. We want you to stay here. And I believe that this bill will get us on the right track there and put us in the right direction to keeping our seniors in Minnesota. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Lohmer. Representative Liebling?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, Representative Lohmer, to that perhaps we should add, but if you're sick, be sick in Minnesota, and if you need long-term care, be in Minnesota. So, but what I wanted to ask you, I've had handed out to everyone, and I'm sure you were unaware of this, but there's a provision in law that I've given everybody that requires, it says, any bill that creates, renews, or continues a tax expenditure must include a statement of intent that clearly provides the purpose of the tax expenditure and a standard or goal against which its effectiveness may be measured. I'm sure you were not aware of that, but you are now. So my question to you is, are you going to add such a statement to your bill as it moves along? And what would the statement be? If you can just kind of tell us. In other words, what do you think of as the purpose and what standard or goal would you use to measure that going forward? So if we pass your bill, we look at it in a couple years, how are we going to know if it's working?
Thank you, Mr. Lohmer. Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Liebling, for the question. I guess I would measure success by my bill is having more folks stay in Minnesota than leave Minnesota, stay here with their grandchildren, stay here to participate in the community, stay here to be active members in their churches and in with their families, and that they would and that Minnesota would move up the list as a favorable state to retire in, because you know whether we like it or not, people can vote with their feet. They can move if they're not happy with the situation, and when it's only one of seven states that taxes Social Security, and I seriously do hear this from a lot of my constituents and a lot of my friends, that it plays a big piece in their decision-making process, but they would like to stay. So that would be my goal, that they would stay, and that would be the end game here. Thank you.
And members, I didn't direct which committee I was moving this to. I am moving that House File 300 move to be re-referred to the Committee on Taxes. Representative Davids, Chairman of the Tax Committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and I want to thank Representative Liebling for pointing this out. However, procedurally, this is not necessary for today's bills, because what will happen is the bills that are included in the omnibus tax bill, section by section, we do purpose statements. So we're not going to have every bill going through the Tax Committee and needing a purpose statement. There will be a purpose statement. In general, not always. We haven't always done the purpose statements, but as a rule, for example, in 2011 tax bill, you kind of went section by section on what the purpose of this area is. So this would be premature for these bills at this point. Now, if this discussion, I think, should be had is if the omnibus tax bill gets to the floor, if it gets there, and then you should be looking for these section by section. And it's, both parties, we haven't always done these, but we're supposed to.
Okay, Representative Liebling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Davids. I'm glad to hear that. And I know a lot of members are not aware of this, but when members do put in a bill, a tax bill that deals with expenditures, tax expenditures, they ought to realize that they need to be able to come forward and include this. And I think that the purpose of it is to really shape people's thinking, because when tax expenditures are expenditures, and when you're putting money towards something else, like, you know, not taxing people's Social Security at all, then you need to think about how you're going to know if your purpose is indeed being met. And so thank you, Representative Lohmer. I hope that you will think and sharpen up. How are we going to measure? Because you said you want more to stay than leave, and I think already many more stay than leave. Is this going to make a difference in how many leave, if that is the thing that you are indeed looking at? So thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Liebling and Representative Yarusso.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. That's a comment on one of the statements that Representative Lohmer made, the idea that don't die in Minnesota, and I really take issue with that. Having physically attended at the deaths of my mother and my father-in-law, and then through it with my father and two aunts and an uncle, they all had an amazing quality of care in their final days that I don't know if we duplicate everywhere in the country. Minnesota has some of the best hospitals in the country, best overall health care systems in the country, and we need to make sure that we remember it's not only about the taxes. And we heard earlier about people coming back, and they come back not only to be with their children, but also because we've got such fine systems, and we've tried to make a commitment to providing that kind of care for all Minnesotans to varying degrees of success. But as I said, it just kind of struck me as being really out of place.
Thank you, Representative Yarusso. Is there any other discussion to House File? And Representative Rosenthal.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Lohmer. I am sympathetic to your bill. In fact, I think I'm a co-author. But I do have some questions. How much of a hole does this leave in the state budget as we're going through this process over the 10 years? That's number one. Number two, you show here we have an average savings of $100 per year for 367,000 of the people that will be affected under this bill. That seems like a very modest amount. And I'm concerned that, as Representative Liebling spoke to before, that as we age and we continue to age and that number grows, how are we going to support the seniors that are now exempt from Social Security? We're not going to have enough people working to fill that hole. So I guess, what are your thoughts on that?
Representative Lohmer, if you could keep your answers to the Aging Policy Committee, that would be appreciated.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Rosenthal. I'm not sure. So could you restate that part of the question?
The second part?
The second part that has
and
to do with this
Rosenthal,
committee.
If you could frame it in the context of this committee, that would be great.
Absolutely, Mr. Chair. First of all, in the context of this committee, it seems to me we're hearing a lot of finance bills, and a lot of money is being going through this committee, and I think it's backwards. We are sort of driving policy towards the money instead of driving good policy and then finding out how to pay for it. So that's just a comment. Representative Lohmer, how much, first of all, are we going to need to fill in the state budget when this is fully implemented, and how much of an impact is that going to put on our people who are still working who are going to need to fill that hole, I guess is the question, because that's a shrinking group.
Mr. Chair and Representative Rosenthal, I think it just goes back to the answer to Representative Liebling's question. The more people that we can incentivize to stay in our state, the more money we'll have here. So that's my goal.
And members, that would be a better question for the Tax Committee. Representative Rosenthal.
Mr. Chair, my in-laws, like the Lilies, go to a warmer climate in the winter, but they choose to stay in Minnesota and pay taxes in Minnesota and vote in Minnesota, although they can't vote for me, unfortunately. They feel a sense of pride
in taking ownership of where they grew up, where they lived, where they raised their children. And, you know, I think we all do as Minnesotans. We take great pride in this state because we do great work. And, again, I don't see how we can drive policy without talking about the money. And, you know, we've talked a lot. We've passed bills, we've held over bills that have a lot of money in them. So where does the policy come from? The policy should come from us, and then we should figure out how much it's going to take to fund those policies, not the reverse. So I'm hopeful, Mr. Chair, that you'll fight for funding for what we've been talking about over the last couple of weeks. And Representative Lohmer, I don't think I really got the answer about how big the hole is and how we're going to fill it. Maybe Ms. Manzi or Mr. Michael could chime in.
I will.
Chairman Davids.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. As long as we're having a lot of questions about tax issues here, rather than policy on aging, we have a rule in taxes that simply says we want to hear all ideas. We may have $1 billion to work with. I've got $8.375 billion in requests. So we'll be making those decisions as a tax committee. But because of the money, I don't want to cut people off from their ideas. And so our tax committee, Republican and Democrat, has been very, very good about hearing ideas. We are way over. The tax committee will make those decisions. But I want to hear all ideas, all DFL ideas, all Republican ideas, and then we have to put it together at the end. So we are way over. I think I'm over $8 billion when we've got probably $1 billion to work with. So that's a discussion for another day, and we will have that discussion. There'll be very many disappointed people when the tax bill comes out because they all have good ideas.
Thank you. Representative Liebling.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would like to have either Mr. Michael or Ms. Manzi speak to the issue about seniors leaving Minnesota, because I think they might have some information about what the research shows on that, and that is kind of the issue that's emerged in this committee as sort of the central policy issue around this. So I wonder if either of them can speak to what the research shows or doesn't show on this issue so that we're not just all speaking in anecdotes.
Mr. Michael, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Joel Michael from House Research. Just to give a response to Representative Rosenthal's question on the fiscal cost of this one, it's fully phased in. I think for the current tax year, the estimates show that it would be about $380 million. And obviously, because of the demographics of the population of the baby boom, we don't have numbers on what that will be, but it's certainly reasonable to conclude that that's probably going to grow faster than just normal growth because of the large number of people who will begin collecting Social Security in the next few years. With regard to the migration question, there's been a lot of research done on migration, and this is not specific to Minnesota, but it's national research that has tried to isolate, using as sophisticated as possible statistical analysis, of the effect of state taxes, both income taxes and estate taxes, on people's choice about where they will live. And obviously, as I think all of you probably recognize, that's a very complex question that involves things like employment, family, services, and all of that sort of thing. And as has been pointed out, you know, taxes finance stuff, and some people have preferences for the stuff they finance as opposed to the taxes and so forth. And so it's like two sides of a coin. But anyway, most of that research, the early research tended to show that taxes did have an effect, but as the research got more sophisticated in being able to control for other factors, most of it, I think the consensus now is that economists are unable to measure an effect of state taxes on migration. There's one caveat to that. There's one very good study that looked at estate taxes, and just the very, you know, very top part of the population that pays estate taxes, the federal estate tax, that's like about the top 1 to 2% of the people of the population by net worth. And that study, using very sophisticated, high-quality methods, found that there was an effect. But if you view it from a perspective of, gee, is that effect so big that it wipes out the effect on the state revenue? That's not the case. What they found was, again, all of these studies, you have a band of reliability, a confidence interval. They found that essentially states would lose about either somewhere between 5 to 30% of their estate tax revenues by having an estate tax because of that effect, which means that it's not a revenue loser, assuming this study is accurate, but it would cut the amount of revenue that you would get. And that took into account all kinds of taxes, the effect of the fact that people don't pay income taxes and sales taxes when they move away. So that's sort of a general summary of what the sort of academic research is on migration.
Thank you, Mr. Michael. Representative Liebling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Michael, also while we've got you up there, could you just talk real quickly about the, I mean, as we know, only 35% of the Social Security that's paid into the state is taxed under our income tax. And could you talk just a little bit about if any of these bills went through, if we got rid of the tax altogether, what income levels would benefit the most? Where would that, I think you said, did you say $700 million when it's phased in? That huge amount of money, who gets the benefit of that by and large? What income levels does it go to?
Mr. Michael.
excuse me. Mr. Chair, Representative Liebling, well, first of all, again, the number is a little, the current fully phased in numbers, excuse me, a little bit under $400 million. And as you point out, in Minnesota, about 35% of Social Security benefits are subject to tax, 65% are not. Nationally, that number is a little bit higher based on, the congressional staff numbers that they use. And the reason why Minnesota pays more is because Minnesota has higher income as a state on average than most other states. We're a successful, economically successful state, and one of the side effects of that, because the way the Social Security tax works, low-income people do not pay, lower-income people pay, either don't pay this tax at all or pay less of the tax on their Social Security. So this, the benefit to this will be in the sort of the middle and upper middle income tax ranges. You're talking about people whose AGIs are typically above 30,000, and the real effect is more above 60 to 70,000.
Thank you, Mr. Michael. Seeing no further discussion, I will renew my motion that House File 300 be, as amended, be re-referred to the Committee on Taxes. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed, same sign.
No.
The bill is adopted as amended. Next, we have Representative Lewick, who has House File 304. I move that House File 304 be recommended to be re-referred to the Committee on Taxes. We have the bill before us. There is an author's amendment that, again, was just like the other amendments, the A2 amendment, and I will move that as well. All those in favor of the A2 amendment signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed, same sign. The A2 amendment is adopted. Representative Lewick, two sentences.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Two sentences.
Vote yes. Yes.
Very simple. Lot of discussion here about what people think. This bill comes right from the folks in my district. Lower middle class, and I sincerely believe it's going to help those folks stay where they're at, I tend to agree, I believe, with Chairman Davids that the more appropriate place for some of this detailed discussion on tax policies within the tax committee. But I do, from the bottom of my heart, and I spent a lot of time in nursing homes with family members who couldn't go to Florida due to health reasons, we really need to take a look at being a little fairer for our middle income seniors here, and I believe this starts to put us in line with the rest of the states in this country. So thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Lewick. I will renew my motion that House File 304, as amended, be recommended to be re-referred to the Committee on Taxes. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, same sign.
No.
Motion prevails, and the amendment is adopted. House File 304, as amended, is recommended to be re-referred to the Committee on Taxes. Next, we have House File 308. Representative Davids, welcome to the committee. I move House File 308 be recommended to be re-referred to the Committee on Taxes. We have the bill before us. There is an author's amendment, the A2 amendment, and I will move the A2 amendment, which is the same as the other A2 amendments. Is there any discussion? Seeing none, all in favor of the A2 amendment signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. The A2 amendment is adopted. Chair Davids, take as much time as you'd like.
Thank you, Mr. Shoemaker. Please vote for House File 308 as amended.
All right. With that, I renew my motion that House File 304 be 308 be recommended to pass as amended and referred to the Committee on Taxes. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, same sign.
No.
The bill is adopted. I move House File 309 be recommended to be re-referred to the Committee on Taxes. We have the bill before us. Are there any amendments to 309? Representative Davids, any words on your House File 309?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. It's a fine piece of legislation. I appreciate your support.
All right. All those in favor of House File 309, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, same sign.
No.
House File 309 has been adopted and referred to the Committee on Taxes.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members.
Next, we have House File 746. Representative Atkins, who is the chief author on the bill, could not be here today, so co-author Representative Yaruso would like to move the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move that we pass the bill along. And thank you. And two sentences. It is essentially the same as Representative Lewick's bill, HF 304, and the difference of these two bills versus 300 and 308 is that it phases it in 20% at a time over 5 years rather than 10% at a time over 10.
Thank
you. And I would like to move the A2 amendment.
Thank you. Representative Yaruso moves the A2 amendment. All those in favor of the A2 amendment signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, same sign. The A2 amendment is adopted. Representative Yaruso renews her motion to move House File 746 as amended, be recommended to pass and move to the Committee on Taxes. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, same sign.
No.
House File 746 is adopted. The next bill in front of us today is House File 407. Representative Driscoll, welcome to the committee, and I'll move House File 407 be recommended to be re-referred to the Committee on Taxes. Representative, to your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. Before you have House File 407, currently in Minnesota state law, an individual who's a Minnesota resident who purchases long-term care insurance through the private market or through an approved vendor here in the state of Minnesota is entitled to receive a tax credit under Minnesota income taxes. As an individual, up to $100 per year, a married couple up to $200 per year, to a total of no more than 25% of the annual premiums that are paid on that particular long-term contract. What you have in front of you is a bill that modifies the tax credit for individuals in the state of Minnesota from $100 from a single to $200, and from $200 to $400 for married couples, and raises the ceiling from 25% to no more than 50% of the premiums. Again, that means that the maximum benefit that one would receive would now be $200 for an individual, $400 for married couples, but again, it cannot, the credit cannot aggregate to more than 50% of the premiums paid by the individual. In your packets was a very nice piece that was put together by House Research that I draw your attention to, and it says current as November of 2014, so it's 2 to 3 months old, and it really does a nice job of outlining when the credit became effective in Minnesota, talks about the terms that a contract must meet, minimum benefits of at least $100,000, put some guidelines on the taxpayers in the state of Minnesota who would be eligible for such type of premiums. And on the reverse side, we'll get a chance to see other states that have tax credits across the country as well. One of the things that you'll notice if you take a look at Minnesota, the number of persons claiming a tax credit on their Minnesota income tax is just short of 61,000 people. Other states are on there have a lesser number, and the state of New York has a larger number. Tax consequence under the current law for the state of Minnesota is about $8.5 million. Doing some quick math, 8.5 million times 2 to double the credit would be $19 million. I'll save you the second math step this morning. If you were to determine that or take $5,000 per month as the average nursing home or long-term care facilities cost to provide benefits times 12 is $60,000 a year. If those individuals have a private contract, that's no additional money to the state of Minnesota. If those individuals in the state of Minnesota did not have a private contract and were looking for public pay or state subsidy on that, taking those 61,000 individuals times $60,000, that's over $350 million a year that the state of Minnesota would be looking to pay. I think it's a wise investment for the state to incentivize people to at the tune of $19 million a year to in the future for benefits for persons who may run through assets or not have long-term care coverage to pay $350 million a year in public tax dollars for that type of support. So, Mr. Chair, I encourage the committee to support such a measure and stand for questions.
Thank you, Representative O'Driscoll. Is there anyone in the audience who would like to testify on this bill? Seeing no one from the audience, I'll take member questions. Representative Liebling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, Representative O'Driscoll, this is one of those wonderful tax policies that sounds really great and probably doesn't work. So I guess, Mr. Chair, I would ask if we could have, again, Mr. Michael or Ms. Manzi up to talk about the effect of this, because Representative O'Driscoll, this, you may remember, there was an attempt to actually repeal this credit in the last legislature, and it wasn't successful. But as I recall, the reason to repeal it was that it didn't work, that it doesn't incentivize anybody to buy long-term care insurance. And I mean, I don't know if that's from your discussion and your kind of speculation about how, you know, if all these people stopped buying private insurance and just depended on the state, of course that would cost us a lot of money. But the real question is, does this incentive do anything? And more importantly, would it do anything if we doubled it? So I guess that's the real question. And if it did work, I'd say, great, let's do it. But I think it's the proponent of it has to be giving us some evidence. So could we ask Mr. Michael or Ms. Manzi to come up to the table, Mr. Chair?
They would be delighted to. Mr. Michael or Ms. Manzi.
So if I may, Mr. Chair, I'd just like to ask Mr. Michael to discuss what you know about the effectiveness of this particular tax credit in getting people to purchase long-term care insurance or keep it.
And if you could do so briefly, Mr. Michael.
Mr. Chair, I will I'll try to be very brief. There is a fair amount of academic research that has been done on the federal itemized deduction for long-term care and the state credits. And there are two things to point out about. I won't, go into the details of this. There are two things that research tends to show. One is that these tax incentives are effective in changing behavior. They do actually encourage people to buy more long-term care insurance than they otherwise would. That's probably not surprising because, you know, economics 101, this reduces the price of the product, so supply-demand curve that moves the curves and would have the result that you expect. If the goal is, though, to reduce the amount that the government spends on Medicaid programs in Minnesota, medical assistance, those studies tend to show that these credits and incentives are not effective on a dollar-for-dollar basis for reducing the cost of medical assistance for Minnesota. and there can be a lot of explanations for why that is. The studies show a range of different ratios, but it's a typical typical thing is that if a state spends a dollar, it may save 40 cents or 35 cents or something like that in its Medicaid costs. You can think about a couple of the reasons why that's intuitively why that likely is the case. First of all, the state's spending a dollar, and immediately more than half of that goes to benefit the federal government and not the state, because medical assistance is paid for 50% by the federal government for Minnesota and 50% by the state. So immediately you're spending money to help the federal government. And to compound that, when we give a tax incentive like this to a Minnesotan who itemizes deductions, that raises their federal tax. And so not only does the federal government spend less on Medicaid, but it collects more tax revenues as a result. The second thing that a second reason why it causes the problem is that the target for this insurance tends to be people, the part of the population that often does not consume medical assistance because they're middle and upper income people who have enough assets that they don't qualify. And so the money that's spent on them helps them, but it doesn't help the medical assistance budget. There's a few other reasons, but I won't go into it. But anyway, these incentives are effective in encouraging people to buy the product, but if the goal is to save medical assistance, it's cheaper to do something else.
Thank you, Mr. Michael. Representative Liebling.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Mr. Michael. So I stand corrected. It's not that it doesn't incentivize the purchase, but I guess then it comes back to this little provision that I handed out, which I hope you got a copy of, Representative O'Driscoll, about stating what your goal is for the legislation and how you're going to measure it. So I hope that as this goes along, and we heard Representative Davids talk about this, I guess the real key thing here is what are you trying to accomplish? And what we're hearing in this committee, and our big issue, is the looming real crisis of a lot of people needing long-term care and how expensive that is for the state, and that could just suck up every dollar so that we're not able to spend on all kinds of other needs for other parts of the population. So I think that what this committee's interested in, I hope, is impacting that problem. And from what we just heard from Mr. Michael, this probably doesn't impact that or help it very much, because we're probably going to be spending more out of the Treasury than, or foregoing more money than we are getting something back in reduced Medicaid costs. So just kind of keeping all that in mind, I know your bill's very well intentioned. I know these things sound really wonderful when they're put forward, and I've just been around a little bit longer than you and have sat on the tax committee, and just know that, you know, we got to listen to our experts and try to make the best balance we can, because we're all just picking between priorities, and we'd all love to have everybody pay not a penny in taxes. We'd all love that, but we also want to be able to spend the money on things people need. So thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. And Representative O'Driscoll, most of that was better for the Tax Committee, and Chairman Davids got to hear that before, too. So if you have any final words for us before we go to vote.
Well, Mr. Chair, I appreciate the opportunity to be before the committee. I would offer additional rebuttal to some of the things that were offered today, but everyone is entitled to their own opinion. I would say that if I have a contract that pays $200,000 out of my pocket before I come to the state to ask for those kinds of payments, that is a savings to any kind of government, whether it be at the state or the federal government level. And Mr. Michaels was talking about a 50-50 split on that. So any money that the state would put out today would be dollars that would be through that contract, saving the state, perhaps bending the curve, maybe not solving the problem, but continuing to bend the curve. So, members, I do encourage your support for this measure.
All right. Thank you, Representative O'Driscoll. I will therefore renew my motion that House File 407 be recommended to be re-referred to the Committee on Taxes. Those in favor of the motion, say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed, same sign.
No.
The motion is adopted.
Mr. Chair, thank you. Members, thank you as well.
Thank you, Representative O'Driscoll. Our final bill today, and we will be voting at 10 o'clock on it, Representative Keel, and I believe she'll be able to move her own bill, House File 278.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yes, I would like to move House File 278 to be recommended to be referred to the Committee on Government Operations and Election Policy.
All right, and Representative Keel, you have a delete all amendment for us?
I do, and that would be, I would like to pass that if that's this time.
Okay. All those in favor of the delete all amendment, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed, same sign. The bill is in the form you want. Representative Keel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. In light of the fact that we have a short time, and I have a couple of presenters that would like to talk about the issue of Alzheimer's and the importance of this bill to finance a little more research, grant research for the discovery and hopefully the helping of families, help families to deal with Alzheimer's, dementia. And I believe some of you have heard the first discussion on this. But I want to take that time to listen to what they have to say, and then maybe we can wrap it up at the end, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Keel. And members, most of the testimony that we have today is in written form. So if the testifiers want to add to that a little bit, I apologize for the time crunch we have here, but anything you can add to that would be welcome. So if you could please state your name for the record and provide us your testimony.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. My name is Deborah Richman, and I am the Vice President of Education and Outreach at the Alzheimer's Association, Minnesota, North Dakota chapter. The Alzheimer's Association is the world's leading voluntary health organization in Alzheimer's care, support, and research. And I thank you for the opportunity to speak briefly with you today regarding Alzheimer's disease, the public health crisis of our time. Alzheimer's disease is a progressive brain disease that damages and eventually destroys brain cells, leading to a loss of memory, thinking, and other brain functions, and it is ultimately fatal. You note in the remarks that it's currently the sixth leading cause of death and the only one of the top 10 without a means to prevent, cure, or slow the progression. We have over 5 million Americans living with this disease and an estimated 100,000 in Minnesota, with nearly a quarter of a million providing care for those with the disease. With the first of the baby boom generation now over age 65, this group is going to double by 2030. The statistics you have in the remarks as well, but just to reiterate, 1 in 9 over the age of 65 will develop this disease, but 1 in 3 over the age of 85. Taken together, these factors will result in more and more Americans living with Alzheimer's, as many as 16 million by 2050, at which point there will be nearly 1 million new cases annually. Between 2000 and 2010, while we've seen a decline in deaths from other of the more significant chronic health conditions, Alzheimer's has increased by 68%. Direct costs of long-term care and health care related to Alzheimer's are also substantial, making Alzheimer's the most expensive disease in America. I believe you have a copy of the newly released 2015 report, Changing the Trajectory of Alzheimer's Disease, How a Treatment by 2025 Saves Lives and Dollars. This report calculates that a treatment introduced in 2025 that delays the onset of Alzheimer's by 5 years would reduce the number of individuals affected by the disease and total costs to all payers. A treatment that delays the onset would cost or would initially cut the number of people in 2050 by 42%, from 13.5 million to 7.8 million. People living with this disease and other dementias would see a reduction in out-of-pocket costs. If you note in that report, compared to the current trajectory without treatment, families would save $87 billion, or 44% of what they would otherwise spend in 2050. Reaching this goal by 2025 would save payers $220 billion over the first 5 years and $367 billion in 2050 alone. Savings to Medicare and Medicaid would account for nearly 60% of those savings. The Medicaid savings in 2030 would total $16 billion, and in 2050, Medicaid costs would be $99 billion, a savings of $77 billion compared to that current trajectory. Total costs by 2030 would decrease from $451 billion under that current trajectory to $368 billion, a savings of over $83 billion. In 2015, the cost to all payers for care of people living with Alzheimer's and other dementias will total an estimated $226 billion, with Medicare and Medicaid paying 68% of the costs. Without treatment, costs are projected to increase to more than $1.1 trillion by 2050. This disease is an epidemic. 11% of Minnesotans over age 65 are living with the disease, and more Minnesota families are going to be touched at a frightening rate. Alzheimer's is the public health crisis of this century and the defining disease of the baby boom generation. For millions of Americans, the heartbreak of watching a loved one struggle with this disease is a pain they know all too well. In addition to the human suffering caused by the disease, Alzheimer's creates an enormous strain on the healthcare system and significant burdens on family, state, and federal budgets. In 2009, the Minnesota Legislature created the Alzheimer's Disease Working Group, and in 2011, this group released a report detailing recommendations carving a path for the state to address the growing Alzheimer's crisis. The report, titled Preparing Minnesota for Alzheimer's, the Budgetary, Social, and Personal Impacts, recommends steps that transform Minnesota into a state that is ready, willing, and able to meet the challenges of Alzheimer's disease. It recommends that the state continue aggressive research for prevention, treatment, and ultimately a cure. Minnesota is already a leader in addressing the Alzheimer's crisis and has a strong tradition of excellence in Alzheimer's and dementia research. Our state is home to the internationally recognized Alzheimer's Disease Research Center at Mayo Clinic, and a unique partnership of biotechnology and medical genomics with the state, University of Minnesota, and Mayo Clinic. Several projects have already been funded in this venture. Successful passage of this legislation would further leverage your continued commitment. The medical infrastructure is in place for Alzheimer's research projects, and continued investment in these projects could result in key findings leading to a solution. Given the growing burden Alzheimer's puts on our state, a commitment to research today will yield savings tomorrow. Minnesota families impacted by Alzheimer's and other dementias appreciate the steadfast support of the Minnesota Legislature. We look forward to your continued commitment to address the public health crisis of Alzheimer's, and we ask this committee to take the lead in the 2015 session with a commitment equal to the scale of the crisis. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Ms. Hansen? Dr. Hansen?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Dr. Leah Hansen. I'm a neuroscientist, and I'm director of research at Health Partners Center for Memory and Aging. I understand you have my written remarks, so I'm going to do my best to just highlight a few key points. I'm here to talk with you about the immense need for research in the area of Alzheimer's disease and related dementias. You've heard about the statistics, and this is coming down on us really quickly. There is research that's ongoing, both for treatments, for care, for cost, for cure, but there is a big gap in funding. And there are ideas, inventions, treatments, interventions out there that aren't able to be tested. Now, while you may have heard about research that is happening at the University of Minnesota and Mayo, as mentioned, I'm here to share with you just a summary of some research happening at other types of institutions like Health Partners. At the Health Partners Center for Memory and Aging, we have 14 active studies in Alzheimer's disease and related dementias. One of the new treatments for Alzheimer's disease recognized nationally as one of the most promising is intranasal insulin, and that was discovered here in Minnesota at Health Partners Center for Memory and Aging. This is a very innovative treatment. The dysregulation of insulin in the brain, not unlike dysregulation of insulin in the body with diabetes, is being recognized as an important component to Alzheimer's disease, prompting some scientists to call Alzheimer's disease a type 3 diabetes or diabetes of the brain. The importance of delivering insulin through the nose nasally is that it can bypass the blood-brain barrier, which is a protective shell or barrier around your brain that helps keep bad things out, but it also keeps good things from getting in. And by combining intranasal delivery and insulin, we're able to replace insulin in the brain, and this has been shown in 3 studies to improve memory in Alzheimer's patients. It's now in large-scale phase 3 trials funded by NIA. But the big but is that this work almost didn't see its way to clinical trials. Because it's innovative, it was high risk, high impact, but it was not accepted and given for funding because with the limited amount of funding, funders tend to give the money towards ideas that have a high chance of success. So it's very difficult to get funding for innovative ideas, which are often those that can have the most impact. In addition to intranasal insulin, I've included a summary of some of the other studies that we are doing at our center, including some industry-sponsored drug trials, developing iron chelators intranasally as a treatment for Alzheimer's disease and other neurodegenerative disease, some non-drug strategies, including things like aromatherapy to help patients with dementia for sleeping, some stress-based reduction studies for both people with Alzheimer's disease and their care partners. The need for Alzheimer's research is also personally driven home for me. Both my grandmother, my husband's grandfather suffered from dementia. I know many of you in this room have also been personally affected. Funding for research can make a difference. An investment in research now can lead to a reduction of the burden later. The more ideas we can test, the faster we can move towards a treatment, prevention, and ultimately a cure. Thank you.
Thank you, Doctor. Is there anyone else in the audience who would like to testify on this bill before we move to member questions? Seeing none, members, are there any questions? Representative Liebling.
Well, first of all, thank you for your testimony, and I think this is an incredibly important issue. Thank you, Representative Keel, for bringing this. My question really has to do with the research and the funding that's needed. And could you just talk a little bit about how this has been funded? I mean, I understand that a lot of this is funded through the National Institutes of Health. And the concern that I have, and I know they've been cutting back, and I'd like you to discuss this if you would, but my concern is that Minnesota doesn't have, we don't have a state institute of health that can make decisions about how to funding basic research. And I'm not sure that we know here in the legislature always, you know, who to pick, where to send money. And I know this bill sets up a council, but it's all about Alzheimer's or other dementias. And we have other demands this session from other on other diseases to fund basic research. So could you just discuss a little bit like what the idea is for how to make sure we're not putting money into something that say Iowa would be putting money into funding the same thing, or, you know, how do we figure that out so that we get the best bang for the buck, if you will, because this is an incredibly important thing. I don't think no one would argue with that, but just how do we do this with make sure our money's best used with our very limited resources?
And who would like to briefly answer that?
I can, Mr. Chairman, Representative.
Dr. Hansen.
I believe the strongest use for these funds that could be kept local and affect people in Minnesota could be around these innovative ideas that there, where there are innovation funds at numbers of institutions at the National Institute of Health, those funding dollars are very limited. I think the NIH has increased funding for Alzheimer's disease, but it's still, I believe, it's something like 2% of the budget for research. And taking into account the total cost of care for people with dementia, that amount of funding is not meeting those needs. I think that everyone needs to step up, foundations, grants, the state, and NIH as well. I don't have an answer of how to make sure we're not repeating work across multiple states. I believe the committee structure for the advisory council has very good constitution, experts in the field in a number of different areas that should be knowledgeable of the work being done around the country.
Thank you. Any follow-up, Representative Liebling?
Well, Mr. Chair, thank you. I was just going to ask, is there anything in the bill that has them look at that so that we're not duplicating other research? Because, boy, if we get into a competition with other states, I mean, competition's great in research, I get that, but I don't know if that would be such a great state investment. Representative Keel has the answer there.
Representative Keel, if you don't have the answer now, I'm sure it would be really good for the Health and Human Services Committees if you have that, but to that.
I think, I don't have direct information. I do know that Alzheimer's research is on the cutting edge here in Minnesota. I mean, this is something that we're emphasizing. And to our conversation throughout this committee, we talked about and referenced the excellent care we have for senior care as we age. And this is a wonderful place in Minnesota. We have the all of the medical research here, top notch. You know, you think about everyone in the world comes here to find out whatever health care problem they have. And so this is a great state to be emphasizing and working on this and getting a handle on it. And it certainly is a serious problem for our aging population. The better we can help families take care of dementia, Alzheimer's patients within their own families, within their own homes, which is part of this bill also, the less money we spend on care at a later age when we're extremely confused and can't stay at home anymore. And so I'll look for some more detailed answers on that. But I would say that we're the right state to do it. So
Mr. Chair.
And members, we are running against our time now. We have a few other people who have questions as well. Representative Liebling.
Just real briefly, and I just want to say I'm totally on board with the piece about the grants for care and innovating in care and all of that. My question really just goes to the basic research, because that's really something the state hasn't done before. It's really new for us to just put money toward specific disease research. That's what I'm concerned about. Thank you.
Dr. Hansen, did you have?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just wanted to say I believe with the Act on Alzheimer's movement that Minnesota is uniquely positioned to be able to ask research questions that aren't able to be asked in other states. And that gets at some of the uniqueness of the state and of this bill, the research that could be conducted.
Thank you, Dr. Hansen. Representative Rosenthal.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Keel, thank you for bringing this bill forward. It's a really, really important topic and something that is I've dealt with in my family, like many others around the table. And just to sort of piggyback on Representative Liebling's question, I also sit on the Higher Ed Committee, and we heard testimony from the medical center about how they go about doing their research and about how they get grants from the National Institutes of Health, and how if you pigeonhole them with a single disease, it becomes problematic because you have brain injuries, spinal cord injuries, and the list goes on. And they're all very, very important. And so I guess to all of you, how would you make sure that you're not duplicating your efforts in certain areas? And is there any communication between the university, health partners, Mayo, et cetera?
And that might be a good question for the Higher Ed Committee as well, but briefly, Dr. Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just would like to say we do have a consortium of Alzheimer's research at the state level that involves both the University of Minnesota, Mayo, health partners, Essentia, other care institutes in the state. And each of us as investigators, as scientists, are also connected with those that look at other diseases like spinal cord injury. So there is a lot of overlap.
Okay, thank you. Representative Yaruso.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I do agree Minnesota is a good place to do this research. One of my husband's aunts is a school sister of Notre Dame, so we're familiar with the participation of the sisters in a large study. I have a question, though. When we do publicly funded research at the national level and at the university, we've worked out what happens with regard to intellectual property. When we're funding research for specific diseases, my concern would be then who owns that intellectual property? Is it if this could result in proprietary medications, treatments, or diagnosis methods? My concern would be that with publicly funded research, that then ends up being available to everyone, and our kind of profit-driven pharmaceuticals industry often puts medications out of the reach of a lot of people.
Anyone to that in particular? Dr. Brown? Dr. Hansen?
Mr. Chairman, Representative, I would say that would be an important issue to be discussed. I think there would need to be some terms in the contract for funding that would address intellectual property.
Okay. Seeing no more discussion, Representative Keel renews her motion that House File 278, as amended, be recommended to be re-referred to the Committee on Government Operations and Elections Policy. All those in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, same sign. The bill as amended is adopted. Finally, members, just a short housekeeping thing. We do have a hearing on Friday. It is an informational hearing. We won't be taking any votes down in Faribault for that. If you could just let us know for planning purposes if you're able to make it or not, I would be greatly appreciated for that. With that, the meeting is adjourned. Thank you.